Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Well, 2024 promises to be a landmark year in banking and finance, marked by significant changes and transformations there. The influence of AI or artificial intelligence will be pivotal, permeating every aspect of the sector. Well, let's talk about the trends that will shape the way we manage and invest our money in the coming year of 2024. And who than Witness to help us understand that and is already on the line. Mhlekazi, good evening.
Good evening, Tapelo. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for asking. And how are you?
Oh, I'm very well. Very well, thank you. And to be honest, you know, I realized after I accepted Bongi's invitation that I'm also here to learn about this.
Oh, wow. Talk about disclaimers. That's a disclaimer right there. That's very slick. Hey, young people will say that's very slick. I suppose what a way to learn that, you know, we can all share a platform where we ask each other and then we all learn, you know, and it becomes this really interesting thing. But yeah, thank you so much, man. Happy New Year, by the way.
No, thanks, and happy New Year to you too.
Thank you so much.
It's a prosperous one for you.
Definitely, definitely. I was, you know, when we started this particular season of Business Sense, someone said, you know, this thing that we normally do, Witness, of we dub different years with different, I suppose, colloquial names and all those sort of stuff. And apparently, 2024 is 2020 soar. So I was like, hey, we are soaring this year. And I was like, when I woke up this morning, it's the 29th. Now it looks like I haven't sworn I'm supposed to be soaring already. So, kind of what's happening. Kanti, we want to talk about financial trends. We're like, oh, okay. That answers it. But yeah, may you soar this year and may you see all the best in 2024. When we check in again in 2025, we want to say, this is where I was, and this is definitely where I am. So we wish you nothing but the best for this year. How was the day, though?
No, it was good. It was a good day, and we really are. We've really started the year on a good footing, and it's a good thing that we're talking about artificial intelligence and machine learning today, because those are really the trends that now are shaping the way we look at banking. Certainly, it's transformed significantly over the last few years, and I agree with you that 2024 will be a significant year in continuing that particular transformation, because it's really post-COVID now.
Yeah.
And idea generation is at its peak.
Sure. That's interesting there. What a way to start. Now, when you started the show, we started with a quote from John, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this one. John says, our incomes are like our shoes. You know, I was actually quite taken by that quote, because I never thought of finances and liking in them to shoes, or even just relating them to shoes. But John says our income are like our shoes. If too small, they will gall and pinch us. But if too large, they cause us to stumble and to trip. Any thoughts there?
That is an interesting, analogy. I think that when you talk about being too the side of being too small, I think it's self-explanatory. Quite clear. But the side of being too large is actually quite philosophical.
Yeah.
Because there are so many stories of people that blew it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Where you actually end up in a space where you have so much money and think that, see the world as your oyster and decide to spend much more than you save, and you know, you find yourself spending money on things that you do not need, because that that those big shoes made you stumble. So I do get I do get the sense in the in the quotes, and financial literacy certainly is something that would stop one from stumbling in that manner.
And I love that, because you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about, it's almost like life works in you know, where you find the sweet spot between things, because sometimes both extremes can be very detrimental, whether good or bad. I think there's a saying that too much of a good thing as well might be detrimental to you as much as too much of a bad thing as well. It's almost like there's a middle ground in all these things, and I've been wondering to myself, just looking at life and all this sort of stuff, if there is a middle ground. Is there such a thing as a middle ground, even when it comes to our finances? And I know we're derailing just a little bit here, but it's a thought that I've been having as well, and just thinking about what John is saying here, to say maybe there's a middle ground, and that's what we should be striving for. Not too much to stumble, but not too little to pinch us as well.
I don't know about there being a middle ground. I think it's, you know, I mean, if you're a top achiever and you're soaring and you're going all the way to the top and you're taking everything, you know, it doesn't make sense for you to at some point say, okay, now I should stop.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that was weird.
It doesn't make sense to say, okay, now I'm now the deputy CEO. So let me not talk to CEO, because then that would not just be too much for me. I think that's, you know, I don't think it's about there being a middle ground.
Yeah.
I think it's about recognizing where you are and you know, asking for help when you need. It's just, you know, like perhaps I can use an example like alcoholism, for instance. If you get to a point where you realize that, okay, this is now too much, then you should go and ask for help. And you know, if you get to a point where you say, okay, now I think I actually have way more money than I need, and I don't know how to actually manage it, then you should go and ask for help.
And not so definitely will help you.
Yeah,
we'll definitely help you in that money. When it's too much and you need help, don't call me. Call me. I'm available.
I don't think there's a middle ground.
Yeah,
I think it's about discipline and knowing when to seek financial assistance.
Yeah, fantastic. That makes sense. Yeah. There's no middle ground. It's about knowing when to seek assistance. That's great. The top financial trends. What are we looking out for in 2024?
Yep. So I think we can start from the top. I think that the most important for me, certainly in you know, in finance, you know, artificial intelligence and machine learning. Because if you look at portfolio management and the principles that you learn in portfolio management and finance in university and postgraduate courses, they really have to do with firstly data analysis in terms of historical and current data.
Yeah.
You know, processing of that data from a quantitative analysis perspective, overlaying that data onto current trends and sentiments, and then, you know, using market analysis to kind of try to forecast where things will go. You know, will the market trend upwards? Will it trend downwards? Will it stay flat? And we would, you know, we would run regression analysis. We would run, you know, I'm sure, you know, finance colleagues know all about the null and the alternative hypothesis, and trying to decide if something is correlated with another factor.
Yeah.
And there is nothing that does that better than you know, artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. like machine learning, mm-hmm. because they process so much data so quickly and mm-hmm. they react, you know, like they analyze trend. They can analyze trends for you in seconds. Mm-hmm. Whereas, human intervention can take weeks mm-hmm. to analyze the sort of data they can analyze in seconds. They can detect trends very mm-hmm. quickly. If they see that, perhaps there's a macro event on the west coast of the US that we don't know about yet, they will pick it up before we see it on the news. And they, mm-hmm. you know, and depending on how you use your AI, you could actually end up with better trading platforms, certainly for your clients. So they're great for actually, they're great for market efficiency mm. and risk management.
Mm.
We're moving into a phase where the use of those sorts of technologies really will assist us in optimizing our portfolios from a financial perspective.
Yeah.
So
before you even go to the next one, I wanted to ask the same question that we always ask, and I suppose it just underscores the argument around how this AI is affecting every sector. In other words, there's no sector that's not affected in some or other way, good or bad, depending on how you respond to the changes, but changes are taking place. And just think about how, for instance, in finance, you would process large amounts of data over sometimes months, because as a human being, obviously, you've got certain limitations and you know, dealing with data and all those stuff. But this thing can help you with data analysis in a matter of seconds for optimal decision making, like you said, and market efficiency and all that. So that you can build correlations and hypotheses and all those sort of stuff, and then project what might happen. Is this thing not taking over people's jobs though?
I don't think that I don't think that it will take people's jobs per se.
Mm.
Sorry, I think my network is a bit bad. Can you hear me?
I can hear you clearly.
Okay, so I don't see this as something that will necessarily take people's jobs. Remember, there's skilled labor and then there's unskilled labor.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't take away from an unskilled worker, because manual labor, for instance, is not necessarily going to be affected by artificial intelligence and machine learning.
Mm.
And then, as far as skilled workers are concerned, my view is that it'll actually make them more efficient,
mm-hmm.
and it will bolster economic growth and increase income levels as far as economies are concerned. So I know that the first reaction is to say that I'll lose my job, but I think that from if one is a skilled worker,
mm-hmm.
this is certainly something that will enhance their ability to deliver more efficiently and more accurately. And like I said earlier, it's from a risk management perspective, it's an excellent development, because we will manage risk and optimize portfolios more mm-hmm. efficiently than we ever have.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I think it makes total sense. And I suppose in the finance world, it can only make things much better. Like I said, even for decision making, trends analysis, like you mentioned as well. So I suppose it can work out much better for people who are already in the space and skilled in this particular field. Because, anyways, data is data, and you still need someone who's going to explain the data and make it make sense. Because numbers are just numbers. Without any explanation, they really don't mean anything. And I suppose that's what you're underscoring, to say, hey, it's there, but it's going to make things much easier. We can now start analyzing trends quicker, watch out and monitor certain things happening in other parts of the world that may affect our markets, the site and investments and all those sort of stuff. I get that, and that makes perfect sense. So this year, you're saying AI is going to be very big.
It's already big.
Mm.
It's just going to get bigger.
Mm. Mm. Okay. What else do we look out for?
Yes. So if we look at the trends from a sustainable investing perspective,
okay.
What you'll see, I think there's a trend that has been emerging there,
okay.
For some time now, where you'll find that investors are now looking more at environmental, social and governance,
yes.
Aspects of
yeah.
Of any investment that they
yeah.
That they enter into. You know, and it really is a decision that is made at a personal level, whether it be a personal level as a human being or as a corporate. Mm. For instance, you'll find that in South Africa, for instance, underlining the environmental aspect
yeah.
of this particular argument, a lot of the South African banks no longer finance. Will no longer look at financing coal mines going forward, because it's seen as a dirty fuel that essentially harms the environment. And then you'll find that as far as sources of capital are concerned, they come and are actually they now specify what you can and cannot invest in order to underline their beliefs from an environmental, social and governance perspective. Then what you also find is that in lending, lenders are starting to reward corporates for meeting environmental,
yeah.
Social and governance,
yeah.
Call it key performance indicators.
Yeah.
So they'll give you a loan, let's say at 5%. And then they'll say to you that if over the next 12 months you reduce your carbon emissions by a certain level, then we'll reduce that that interest rate by a certain, percentage, such that you start to pay less interest. So you get rewarded for actually adhering to environmental, social, and governance goals. So that's actually that's another trend that that is emerging, and a lot of call it money that is earmarked at projects that enhance the those three aspects is actually floating out there.
Sure, that's really interesting there. I suppose for our listeners who may not know, this is when you hear. In business news, talking about ESG, this is exactly what Witness is talking about. I actually have a friend, Witness, né? And for his master's paper, he actually wrote about how the market is actually pricing in ESG into their investment decision-making, like you said. And it's interesting to have read the paper in terms of the development of this particular trend that you're talking about, which seems to be taking over the market, as it were. But here's the thing that I wanted to ask you. You made it in reference to the mining sector. The mining sector is one of the biggest employers in this country, and one of the biggest GDP generators in this particular country. Is there some leeway? Is there some space? Is there a platform that's currently in the investment world which is given to this particular sector on that basis? Or is it a thing that South Africa needs to shape up very quickly?
I think it affects the mining industry broadly.
Yeah.
However, if you look at mining in South Africa, one would say that the country really is the biggest call it source of platinum group metals,
yeah.
which are platinum, palladium, rhodium, and
yeah.
gold, etc.
Yeah.
And that particular lending into that, but those particular mining call it disciplines and others, is something that is still happening.
Yeah.
So there's still appetite for that.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is the, you know, the coal mining side, and that's why you know I think I think it was COP26 was trying to achieve was that we reduce carbon emissions by limiting the use of fossil fuels. And South Africa's response has been to say, well, we actually, our base load from a electricity perspective is generated by coal. And like you say, a lot of jobs, certainly in Mpumalanga, rely on coal mining. So there certainly is a realization that it's not something that we should switch off overnight.
Yes.
It's something that we will take time to call it taper off as we increase, certainly from an energy security perspective, as we increase our renewable sources of energy. But yeah, you're quite right. It's coal mining is quite important from an employment perspective, particularly in the Mpumalanga province.
Yeah, sure. It's going to be interesting to watch that when I witness. I actually saw a couple of years ago. This must be now 3 years ago, right? One of the biggest mines in South Africa was actually putting out an advert that they're going future smart mining, you know, and I found that quite eye-opening because I suppose they realized the trend around ESG and the difficulty in attracting investment and investors because of, you know, the imperatives of ESG and all that. And I suppose investment banks and like yourselves are also pricing in this whole issue of ESG in your investment decisions. But it was interesting. I suppose, they saw that, you know what, let's rather then find other ways of mining in a more sustainable manner, which will then help to attract investment. So because there's nothing we can do about the coal, right? So let's rather mine this coal in a very sustainable manner, right, as a way to, I suppose, negate the argument that says, but you are mining, you know, and mining coal specifically. Like, how about you do it in a sustainable manner? And I found that interesting. I don't know if that's the kind of conversations that, besides the PGMs that you're talking about, the other mines are having conversations around that as well.
Yes, no, absolutely. And because you have to, everyone is thinking about offsetting their carbon emissions and call it environmental disturbance. And, you know, everyone is doing what they can all the way from building solar farms so that they don't rely on Eskom's coal-fired generation. They are, like you say, you spoke about future safe mining. You know, we've seen entities that have come up with you know, massive mining trucks that actually do not require diesel. They're not diesel powered. They're actually powered by renewable energy sources, by fuel cells, essentially. And you know, so, and a lot of miners are coming up with these initiatives to offset what they're actually doing to the environment. And you'll find that in every single, or a lot of major mining companies, if you go to their financial reporting suites, you'll find an annual report that talks about performance and what they're doing in their business. And it will probably be about 200 pages. Then you'll find a 300-page sustainability report. Because that has become so important to investors. I mean, your annual report talking about financials is 200 pages, but your sustainability report is 300 pages.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how important ESG has become.
Yeah, Yeah. But I suppose it speaks to the so-called accounting going concern, you know, because as an investor, you want to make sure that this thing will still exist. If I put in 5 million rands or 10 million rands into this business, yes. I want to know that it will still, still be operating in the next 10 years. And that's precisely because if they don't take measures to do things in a sustainable way, then it might just erode my investment in the next 2 years. And maybe for some people, we don't have the luxury of actually, losing that much amount of money. But I want to go back here. I don't know if you've got another trend to look out for, but as we just close on this ESG thing, have we even come to a consensus of what this thing means? Because if you look at, for example, without necessarily putting the spotlight on them, Steel Waters defines ESG differently to what the other mines are doing, right? And the other mines are defining differently to what Steel Waters is defining them as. And I found that, at least through the work that I was doing last year, that there isn't even a consensus on what ESG should look like. What are the measures? Because you find that most people, especially when they look at the S, right? Most companies apply the S to ESD as well. And then there's that overlap from an ESD point of view to that S, and people just want to double dip, where you're dipping from a triple B point of view on the ESD, but you're also double dipping on ESG on your scorecard. I know we've developed some kind of measure of scorecards on ESG internationally that I think everyone is trying to align them. And then you find others trying to align the ESG to SDGs, because there seems to be no consensus on what this ESG thing should look like.
Yeah. No, I agree, and I don't think it's easy to get to a consensus, because not everyone is starting on an equal footing as far as the environment that you're mining in is concerned.
Yeah.
Miners that are mining in the Northwest are mining in a very different ecosystem to miners that are mining in Mpumalanga, to miners that are mining on the West Rand of Johannesburg.
So it will be different. Yeah.
It will be different. Yeah. I mean, what you have to offset if you're a miner that is mining in the jungle or in the rainforest in the DRC, for instance, the issues are very different to a miner on the West Rand. So you can't start, you can't have the same solutions from an E perspective.
Mm.
That's already something that is very difficult to achieve.
Mm.
Then if you go to the S side of things, the social construct of the communities that everyone is mining in are very different.
Mm.
If you're mining in Gauteng, Gauteng communities have been mining since 1896, and are quite advanced in that regard. Whilst communities in the Northwest, for instance, let me not say new to this game, but are not as the fundamentals will be very different as far as what you have to do from a social perspective to achieve the goals of a community in the Northwest to what you'd need to do for a community on the West Rand to what you'd need to do for a community in Mpumalanga. And then from a governance perspective, same thing. The governance issues that you face in South Africa are very different to the governance issues that you would face in the DRC, for instance. So I think everyone just needs to consider the environment that they are working in from an ESG perspective and apply solutions that they can defend to investors to attract capital.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. And I always found these discussions quite interesting, because it's almost like everyone speaks from their end point. And maybe like you're saying, it's fair for everyone to argue from their end point, because that's their lived experience on a day-to-day basis, you know. I can't take an S solution in Limpopo and try and apply it in Mpumalanga. It's not going to work, right? The issues are different there from a social point of view and all that. And I suppose then, depending on the industry that you are in, these things will morph into different, pictures, depending, like you're saying, on the industry that you are in. I don't know, Witness. Maybe this is where you can make a couple of billions with an idea here, where we just find what are the common things across, maybe not all the industries, but across all the some or most of the industries where you can have this. Because I think if you look at, for example, people that are in the environmental space, although as broad as the environment is, we are finding people coming up with solutions that help companies to actually buy credits for some of the work that they're doing in preserving the environment and restoring it back to where it is, right? From mining to manufacturing and all that. But there are calculators that are being developed in the e-space that are helping just by looking at common threads across different industries. And they sell this to different companies that are, I suppose, buying it, depending on whether they are manufacturers, miners, whatever the case. So it seems like there's something we are going towards on the E. And maybe the S and the G can follow suit as well.
No, yes, absolutely. I think a lot of attention has been afforded this space, if I look at ourselves as a bank, you know, we actually now have whole departments that did not exist, let's say 10, 15 years ago, that just focus on on ESG, and those are the think tanks that are looking at coming up with the solutions that that you just described, and I think it's work that certainly I'm looking at very very closely, because it does affect the future of our children.
When I witness, you guys have nice jobs. You guys are working with nice things there, coming up with solutions to very complex things. You know, very complex things that the world is battling with. And you guys just wake up in the morning and talk ESG. Like,
you guys solutions have nice to global jobs. Problems.
Exactly. You see what I mean? You guys are important people in this world, you know, that are doing some really interesting things. And I'm cognitive of time there. How do you bring it home? What are other issues to look out for as we draw to a close?
Look, there were... I had a number of things on my list, to be honest. I think it's quite, I mean, if we go back to how digital has developed, I mean, you know, I certainly don't carry cash around anymore. Digital payments are a thing now. You know, any app that you use, whether it be Uber or Uber Eats or anything else where you have to pay, you simply load your card details. You click what you want, you click where you're going, you don't have to carry any cash. You travel, you don't have to carry any cash because you can use your card wherever you're going. You can use things like you know, if for instance you're like me who comes from Zimbabwe, you know, to send money home, I don't have to go to the city anymore because there's an Mukuru app, and I just go to the app and I send
the money. Look at that.
But then that you know, all this digital evolution, then it creates an issue from a cybersecurity perspective, because there are smart sharks out there that are looking to intercept information. They're looking to intercept cross-border payments and essentially just looking to defraud everyone. And that's become, it became quite a big trend maybe perhaps over a decade ago. But artificial intelligence is also now coming into, coming up with solutions for that, just to essentially protect infrastructure and privacy and preserve the reputations of financial intermediaries. So those are the other, you know, a couple of other points that I wanted to talk about in addition to a few others, but I think we're probably out of time soon.
Yeah, that's interesting. Perhaps we could pick it up on part two of this conversation, because I think there's still quite a lot, like you're saying, that we can unpack. Going back to these digital payments, you know, and the issue of cybersecurity, which is related to digital payments. I mean, they've made life much easier. Like you said, you don't necessarily now need to go to town. You know, you don't need to carry 5,000 rands in your bag where you run the risk of being robbed in town. You know, literally sitting at home, you can just do those payments. And obviously, there are people who think, here's an opportunity. It's almost like technology was creating a solution, right, in the banking space that inadvertently created another problem.
Yeah. No, indeed. Indeed. I think... I actually have you know, a few friends that are in the, you know, that were early adopters in studying and getting involved in cybersecurity, and the amount of money that organizations pay to ensure that that is you know, that is intact is astounding, because you know you don't want to be let's call it that financial institution that got hacked and people's accounts got wiped out. You can you can never get your reputation back if something like that happens. But I think what also helps is that regulated businesses, you know, like banks, also benefit from not only, you know, not only is it your responsibility as a board of directors and management team to ensure that you have sufficient controls in place from a cybersecurity perspective, but the South African Reserve Bank actually tells you that that's what you need to do, and you know, that's what that's where that, you know, wherein lies, you know, one of the things that perhaps we should talk about another time, which cryptocurrencies, wherein lies the issue with that. With payment methods such as cryptocurrencies, because they're not regulated. Whereas banking regulation ensures that as a financial institution, you actually do what you have to do to avoid such attacks that could result in the loss of depositors and voters' money.
That's very, hey, we want our money. We don't want, you know, any to say. You know, the other day you might have seen as well, there was this particular bank, you know, and people were complaining about, you know, you just open the app and it says 00, and you know very well there was money here. So what just happened? And as due to it's back again. And I think that just kills people's confidence in that bank, because you don't want to wake up where I don't want to have a heart attack when I knew that there was X money in my account, and then when I log in, it's not there. And I'm logging in at 12 midnight. There's no one to call. I'm just going to have a heart attack and die right there and there. But I think we saw a mass exodus of people that actually left that bank. Although it still has good numbers. I mean, it still has good numbers. It's a good stock if you want to invest in it. The returns look quite very good. But I think they suffered quite a lot, and goes back to that reputation thing that you're saying. As well, which is, yeah, I think the cryptocurrencies is another conversation on its own that you know, we need to open one day. But I think it has a massive reputational risk for any bank that does not put those measures in place. Don't play with our money, witness. Don't play with our money. We work very hard for that money. We are on work sometimes 18 hours. So please, Sankela, don't play with our money. But in 10 seconds or so, witness, all these big gums, big words that you've used, someone might ask, what does it mean for me? Am I supposed to align myself? What am I supposed to do?
No, I think it's about adapting. One really needs to look around them and actually realize that, like I said earlier, this is enabling. So I think when we spoke earlier, when I spoke about enablement, I was speaking from a work perspective, right? So I think one should take the opportunity to use what's out there to really enhance their financial wellness. So I'll give you an example, and there's another topic that we didn't touch on. It's really how these applications have become key. These apps on phones have become key in financial management. So I, for instance, bank with Nedbank, and Nedbank has what we call the Nedbank Money app. And like, you can do anything on that app. You can watch your spending trends. You can save. You can invest with the press of a button. You can check what's going on with the markets. You can trade shares. You can check what the latest trends are in artificial intelligence, et cetera, et cetera. And one needs to embrace what's actually going on out there and make the best use of it. Certainly from an investing and financial wellness perspective.
Sure. It's about adapting there. That's the word that I took. Witness, thank you so much. We are not done with this topic. I know you got carried away with ESG and AI and all, but I feel like we are not done with this topic. There's quite a lot that we can still unpack on this one. But as always, I really, really appreciate your time and your insights, and may God continue to bless you.
Thank you very much, Tepelo, and always happy, always a good chat.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.